towards the bottom of Gimel Aleph, as Amar Reb Chisda. So we've just shown that the various sources that we count the years for, Tanakh counts the years for kings from Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So Amar Reb Chisda, the third, the fourth of the wide lines, Lo Yishonu El Malchi Yisrael. This is only true for Jewish kings, the kings of Klal Yisrael. But when it comes to the kings of the non-Jews, so then we use Tishrei as the determining point. So we explained last week, I think in the name of the Sefer, the Nachal Elio, that when it comes to the Umos Olam, so their relationship, their goals are what we call Tikkun Olam, to take care of the world, to make the world into a better place, to protect the world. So they work with Rosh Chodesh Tishrei Hayom HaRas Olam at the beginning of Bria. However, Klal Yisrael has an additional obligation, and that is to worry about the Klal Yisrael, the birth of Klal Yisrael, is Rosh Chodesh Nisan, that we have to worry about it being Mekadosh Shem Shemayim, because Baruch Hu is Megal himself in Rosh Chodesh Nisan. So therefore, the dates line up with the overall mandated obligations. So Gemara says, how do we know this? When it comes to Malchei Umos Olam, we shift to Tishrei, we don't use Nisan. So Gemara says we can bring proofs from the way that Tanakh records the events of the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, because second Beis HaMikdash, we lived in foreign territory. Klal Yisrael lived in Babel primarily, and a small group came back to Eretz Yisrael. But so much of the end of the Nevi'im Achronim, the end of the what we call the later prophets, it's not really later prophets, it's the prophets that are less, that are more Musar, more direction than the prophets that are recording history. When we look at the end of that, of the prophets, the end of the time of prophecy, we have Haggai and Zechariah and the Malachi and Ezra and Nehemiah, all towards the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. So then the events are recorded as, are timed by the, are recorded using the using the dates of the non-Jewish Persian kings. So now we're going to look at the beginning of Nehemiah and see how the events are recorded in accordance with the non-Jewish king. Artaxasta is probably the label that the king had in Babel, and the Persian king had, just like the Egyptian king had Paro, and the king of Yerushalayim was called Malki Tzedek or Adoni Tzedek. So the king of Babel had a name called Artaxasta. And the Navi of Nehemiah opens up with Divrei Nehemiah ben Chachalia, Nehemiah, who was the leading figure in Babel, Vehiba Chodesh Kislev Shnas Esrim. It was the 20th year. The Gemara is going to say 20th year of since when? It was long past the destruction of the first base of Migdash. It wasn't the 20th year when it got to Babel. So the Gemara is going to point out that other dates in Nehemiah are recorded in sync with the Persian king. So this is the 20th year of the Persian king, the 20th year of Artaxasta, Kislev of the 20th year. Uksiv, and a parak later, Vahiba Chodesh Nisan Shnas Esrim Artaxasta, Nisan of the 20th year. Vinekoi Bekislev, Vikorin Le Shnas Esrim, Vikoi Be Nisan, Vikorin Le Shnas Esrim, if the events of Nehemiah 1, and the events of Nehemiah 2, and we're going to show in a moment that they are chronologically in order. So if the events of Nehemiah 2 take place after 1, and if the events of Perek 1 are in the Kislev of the 20th year, and the events of Perek 2 are in the Nisan of the 20th year, then Nisan could not be the Rosh Chodesh, the Rosh Hashanah for non-Jewish kings. It is to be a Jewish king, Shlomo HaMelech, that when Nisan comes, it's a new year. So you couldn't have Kislev being the 20th and Nisan being the 20th, and Nisan follows Kislev. So it must be that we're using Tishrei. If we're using Tishrei, so Tishrei marked the 20th year Artachshasta, and then in the first parak, we have the description of Hanani coming to Bavel and telling Nehemiah about what's happening in Eretz Yisrael. And then in Perek Beis, we have a Nehemiah then tries to prevail upon the king, Artachshasta, to help him respond to the Jews in Israel. The Gemara says, "Menikoy b'kisev v'kor v'lishnas esrim v'koy b'nisan v'kor v'lishnas esrim v'chlal." This proves to us if Kislev and Nisan are both in the 20th year, so then it must be that Rosh Hashanah could not be Nisan and is much more likely to be Tishrei. The Gemara says, "Bishloy meheich meforish l'atachshasta elahai mimayd l'atachshasta." So the Gemara says, "One second, the opening parak of Nehemiah." Just says the 20th year. Does it the 20th year to what? So maybe the first parak is the 20th year to some event. And the second parak is the 20th year to the reign of Artachshasta. Mimai de la Artachshasta. Who said that the 20th year of the first parak, where it doesn't say explicitly that it's the 20th year of Artachshasta, that in fact it is the Artachshasta cow. Dilma l'minyana achrina. Maybe some other cow. Tyson, the very top of Gimlet Beis, says maybe there was some other major event that happened there, and they were counting 20 years from that event. If you have very often in wedding invitations, you'll have when they used to have wedding invitations. So you'd have that they'll count that it's 20 happening in 2021, because you have to know when it's happening. But then we want to make it Jewish, so we put in the Hebrew date. So we'll put Tav Shin Pei. All right, so we know that a Tav Shin Pei is in Bria Solom. But then some people want to give Kovit to Eretz Yisrael. So they'll put in that it's the, I don't know what it is, this is 48. So within the 72nd, 73rd year from the establishment of the state. And then there are those who want to give Kovit to Yerushalayim. So they'll say that it's X number of years since we got back Yerushalayim. And it's not a bad, I wouldn't say we should all be then, but it's not a bad idea. Why is it not a bad idea? Because Ramban says that we date, that all our dates have to remind us of a geula. So that's what we count from Nisa and Rav Gulis Yisrael. And then we use the Aramaic names to remind us that we were redeemed from Babel. So it's not a bad idea to say that the state, Yerushalayim, these are all different stages of redemption. So. But the point that we're making is that you do the minyan achrina. Sometimes you'll say, this was the X number of years since a major event. So Amar Papa, Shnas Esrim, Shnas Esrim, Mitzvei Rishava. So the Gemara says, you have the 20th year is mentioned in the first parak. 20th year is mentioned in the second parak. So we have a rule that when the Torah was given, the Kadosh Baruch Hu said that if you have words that are identical, then you can make certain equivalences between the two words. And if one word has a certain defined in a certain way, so the other word is assumed it's writing on that definition. Now, probably over here, and the classic one, the one that we first learned when we were kids, is how do we know that the Eved, when he gets his ear lobe pierced, that it's the right earlobe? The Rashi says, because Tanuch Oz, and that phrase is used once in Chumash, and another time in Chumash, and that's when it comes to the Mitzorah. And the Mitzorah gets things sprinkled on the right earlobe. So Rashi quotes, it's one of the first Gezeirah Shavas people learn in school. So but it's a very sharp Gezeirah Shavah, because it's how often does the word earlobe come up in Chumash. So once the Torah says the earlobe is the right earlobe. The other time it just says the earlobe, doesn't say the right one. Right or left. So the Gemara says that Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us one of the rules we can explain Torah is we find these words, and the Gemara has various rules of when you can use. Sometimes the word has to actually be an extra word, an unnecessary word. In this case, it isn't so, and then becomes less. And it's not correct English, but less refutable. it becomes easier to challenge than if the two words are unique words. So here the Gemara is saying the same thing, that it says the 20th year, doesn't say to what event. 20th year to the beginning of the reign of Retach Shasta, so it gives us the understanding that's being counted at the same time. I would assume that this is a loose usage of the word Gezer Rishava, because Gezer Rishava is according to almost all Rishonim, except for one. I think the Gezer Rishava is something that has to come from Har Sinai. And at Har Sinai, the Gemara says that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us which words we can use for Gezer Rishava. So I don't think it's appropriate to use the phrase Gezer Rishava for two psukim that are in Nehemiah. It's conceivable that the Nevi'im, when they wrote the Nevi'im, used the same kind of tools that Kadosh Baruch Hu used, but I don't think we usually use that phrase. But I think the Gemara is saying is it's using it liberally, but it's explaining to us the logic behind Gezer Rishava. If I have in one event, and it says this happened in the 20th year since Atachata came to power, and then I have in the next parak, this is the 20th year. So it stands to reason that if it would be a 20th year from a different count, it should be specified. So the Gezer Rishava here is not a technical Gezer Rishava, but it's the logic behind the Gezer Rishava. There is a question of how much logic there is in Gezer Rishava. That's part of the machlokes, about whether Gezer Rishava has to be handed down to us from Har Sinai. So the Gemara says 20th Atach Shasta, and if Kislev is before Nisan, that means the Rosh Hashanah for non-Jewish kings or Persian kings, when we are counting it. When the Goyim count it, have nothing, I don't think use Tishrei. But when Jews are telling events, or if Jews are dating their documents, and they're dating the documents and they're using the non-Jewish king, so we would then have there be a Jewish count as to how long the president was in power. Now, we wouldn't work with inauguration. We would not work with when they became president-elect. We wouldn't work with when all of the litigation is finished. We would work with the Tishrei. And you see, and here you see why. Because let's say litigation goes on, and then it's only sometime in the mid, I don't know, figure month, all of a sudden there's a confirmation, whatever. So you'll have half the country saying he only became president, and half will say in January. Half the country will say he became president in whatever, when the litigation is over. So it could even be different years. So the Chazal, with their insight, said you got to have a convention for documents, right? For politics, for history books, biographies, do what you want. But for documents, you have to have a convention. So over here, when it comes to our halacha, when it comes to we living in a Golos and a Golos country, so we would use the king of the Golos country. We wouldn't date our shtaros to Eretz Yisrael. Why? Bishum Shalom Malchus. Because it would be very offensive if we're living in America and then we're dating using the dates that they use in Eretz Yisrael. So that's the Shalom Malchus is the opening of the Masechta. So it would be disrespectful. So we have to use, however, we don't expect every kid to know history. So we don't expect every kid to know. And now it can be different because it is the same month for every president. But not every kid has to know. Let's say probably LBJ became president. Wasn't the inauguration day? In November. Okay. So not every kid has to know when the night goes from Canada. And Luce the States knows when LBJ became president. So Mishum Shalom Malchus, we have to. So we will use our Batei Din, and we'll say we have our own count from Tishrei, but we're going to give Kavod to the king. So the Gemara says, so that would be Tishrei. We learned that because when the Nevi'im recorded the events at the beginning of the second base of Mikdash, and they were living in Babel, so they used Babylonian kings to create the dates, the events, right? And the truth is, it goes even deeper than that, because Chazal view the way that you date something as very often one of the precursors. For example, when we say Al Anisim, we say Bimei Mordechai Esther, Bimei Matisyo. Why are we dating it? We should be saying Bimei Achashverosh, because they came, right? But Bimei, we should find out who was the king at the time of the Chashmeidom and use the king's name. So Chazal point out that sometimes the event happened because of the of Mordechai and Esther. The event happened because of Matisyo. So Chazal are probably reminding us that the event happened because we're in Golos. And that's what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky points out to the Amalbim. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky makes this point, that we kept the Persian names of months to remind us that this Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash, is not going to be an everlasting one. So that means that as we date things, we remind ourselves we are not Bizman Geula, and whatever events are happening, happen because we're in the shadows of a second Beis HaMikdash. Similarly, when we're in Golos, so the events that are taking place because we're in Golos. So the dates become important. The dating becomes part of our thinking as well. So the Gemara says, Omer HaPopo, Shnas Eshrim, Shnas Eshrim, Zereshavim, Ahosim, Latach Shasta, Avachal, Artach Shasta, Umimai. But now the Gemara said, here you see how rigorous the Gemara is. The Gemara said, we know that the Nevi'im are not organized in chronological order. It comes to Chumash, a Nuktum Umuchar Matorah. Things are not necessarily in chronological order. When it comes to Navi, you know for sure. We know that when it comes to Yeshayahu Navi, the sixth Perek is the very first Nevuah. So we know that from Perek Mem to the end are the voice of comfort. So I don't think we imagine that Yeshayahu Navi had parts of his life because Baruch only gave Musar, and parts of at the end of his life it only gave Nechama. It probably means that Yeshayahu Navi had interspersed Musar and comfort, and then, because there's no event in Yeshayahu's life when all of a sudden trigger, now have to give them Nechama. So probably they're dispersed when Yeshayahu Navi organized his Nevuah. So he divided up for us Musar till Perek Mem. From Mem on is the Divrei Nechama. So similarly, the Nevuahs are not the Nevuahs of Yirmiyahu before Tisha B'Av. We learned several Parakim. We had to dance around to get the chronological order. So the Gemara says, how do you know that the first Perek took place before the second Perek? So the Gemara says, look at the content. The content is, Gemara says, Dilma Maisa Nisan Kodim, Blaisokanah, it can't be. There you can't be. Why? The Tanya, Devarim Sha'amar Hanani Lenachemi Bekislev, Amra Nechemya Lemelech Benisan. Because the story, you gotta read the story. The story is the first Perek of Nechemya. Nechemya is in Babel. A Jew comes from Eretz Yisrael, Hanani. And Hanani and Nechemya asks, what is the state of the Jews in Israel? Now, our Gemara is going to put this into the context of this being years after the second Beis HaMikdash was already built. So there's, I think, some 20 years already, 10 or 20 years. So Nehemiah's in Babel, he did not go with the first wave. The first wave went, built the Beis HaMikdash, his second wave, built the second Beis HaMikdash. Nehemiah stays in Babel. And then Nehemiah wants to find out what's going on in Eretz Yisrael. So apparently the picture we get from this Amud, Taisha spells it out where the lines get wide, and Rashi spells it at the very top. So the impression we get is that the Beis HaMikdash was built, but the walls around Yerushalayim were not well kept. And the poverty in Yerushalayim was terrible. So Hanani comes and tells Nehemiah a desperate story of what's going on. And then Nehemiah records this and tells this to the king at Artaxasta in the second parak. So the Gemara spells it out. The Gemara says, Devarim Shamar Hanani and the Nehemiah Bekislev, Shen Nemar, Devarim Nehemiah Ben Chachalia, Vahiba Chodesh Kislev. This is the opening of the Perek, of the Sefer of Nehemiah, the book of Nehemiah. And it was in Kislev, Shnas Esrim, the 20th year. Vahniya Yisli Meshushan Abira, and I was in the capital of the Persian Empire. And one of my people comes from Yerushalayim, who vanoshim mi Yehuda, and he came with other Jews from Yehuda, v'eshalem al Yehudim hapleita, and I asked about the Jews, the refugee Jews in Eretz Yisrael, asher nisharu min hashevi v'al Yerushalayim. What's happening with the Jews that were left in Eretz Yisrael after Israel was run over by the Babylonians? And I asked about Yerushalayim, v'yomrul, and they said, "Anish oremesh anish arum and hashevi sham b'mdina b'ra'a gedola u'becherpa." That the Jews that are left over there are in a very terrible situation. They are desperate, u'becherpa, shameful. V'choymes Yerushalayim neforet says, and the walls of Yerushalayim are blown open. U'sharel nitzchu be'esh, and the gateways are nitzchu, are still black with the soot from the fire. So I don't know if this means this is the way it was from the first Beis HaMikdash, or if it means that there was some trouble in Yerushalayim between those who went back to build. But whatever it is, the picture we get is the Beis HaMikdash was up and running, and the walls of Yerushalayim were not in good shape, and the Yishuv, the Jews living there, were not in good shape. Amr Nehemiah the Melech Menisos. The next parak, Nehemiah records this. Shenemar, the second parak. Ve'ibachoydish Nisan, Shnas Esmer Tavshas, the 20th year of Tavshas, the Melech, Yayin Lefonov, Vo'etna Lamelech. And I picked up the wine and I gave it to the king, because Nehemiah was one of the servants of the king. And one of his jobs was to take care of the drinks of the king. Taramash, correct. So I gave the wine to the king. And I did not think that I was depressed. And the king says to me, why do you look depressed? Why do you look so terrible? You don't seem to be ill. It must be that you're sad, you're depressed. I was very afraid. Now the Pashta says he was afraid because he's going to make a big ask of the king. He's afraid to do that. And he says, long live the king. Asher hey a'ir, he says, "Why? How can I not be depressed?" Asher a'ir beis hakvor beis avosai, because the city, which is the beis hakvor, is the place where his ancestors are buried. Chor was destroyed. Usha orveha uchlu ka'esh, and its gates are still charred with fire. And the king said, "No, why are you telling me this? Right? What are you asking?" And he said, "I did a quick davening. I opened my heart to God. And as I was davening, after I davened, I said to the king, which is the same lashon you have in." And it was Esther, right? If Allah Melech Tov, said, I guess it worked once for Esther and Achashverosh, he'll try it again. If Allah Melech Tov, and the other inference we have, maybe over here, we know that Megillah was Esther, when it says HaMelech, it means Hashem. So Esther was talking to Achashverosh and saying, if you are looking at me in a benevolent fashion, but in her heart she was saying, if a Kodesh Baruch Hu will look at me in a benevolent fashion. So Nehemiah may be the same thing. Nehemiah was davening. He was looking at the king. But he's talking to Kadosh Baruch Hu. If Yitam Avedechel Lefanecha, and if I have found favor with you, Asher Tishlachan El Yehuda sent me to Eretz Yisrael, El Ir Kivrei Savoisai, to the place where his ancestors are buried. But Ebnenan, I want to build it. By Yermeli Amelech, the king says, Vashegel Yeshemes Etzloi, one shot is, and the queen was sitting right next to him, Ad Mosai Yiyeh Malcha, how long are you going to be away? So I need to know. You're the Sarah Mashkin. How long is it going to take? Umosai Tosu, when are you coming back? Vayitav Lefnei HaMelech, and the king thought it was okay. Vayishlachani, and he sent me. Ve'etna Lozman, they gave him time, and I'll be back. There is an interesting comment by the Maharsha. The Maharsha says that it doesn't say over here that he gave the that he says, well, Esther, I lifted up the wine. So the Rasha says that Nehemiah was doing something different that day. Nehemiah was known as Hatar Shasta. The Gemara, the Yerushalmi says, why was he, the Rasha puts that, why was he called Hatar Shasta? Because he was Hatar Shasta. He had received a special leniency, a heter, to drink. In other words, the wine that Nehemiah gave to the king was not kosher wine. It wasn't, it didn't have any tarfus inside of it. It hadn't been used for Avodah Zarah, but it was non-Jewish wine. It wasn't mevushel. So, and part of the job of the Sarah Mashkim is to drink the wine first. So what the Sarah Mashkim was supposed to do is show the bottle to the king, pour for himself, right? And then, if he's still standing, so then he pours for the king. That's his job. Okay, what permitted him to have, how could he take such a job? He should have gone for a different job. Imam has to have wine that he shouldn't be drinking every single time the king wants to drink. So Hatar Shah, so the king, to the Chazal said, it's important for us to have a Jew like Nehemiah in the palace of the king. We permit him. It's for good for Claudius Rome to have a lobbyist, to have a Jew well-placed. So that's why it's called Nehemiah Hatar Shasta. Now, Nehemiah could not bring himself to drink anything when he heard how terrible things were in Eretz Yisrael. So that's how the king, so when he came to the king, so the king says to him, and I picked the wine up and I didn't taste it. Because I felt, this is what the Maharsha explains, because I said, I'm going to drink a wine. I'm going to have luxury. I just heard a terrible thing. He's so depressed. I got a can of wine. And I gave it to the king. And I tried very hard not to look upset. And the king saw that I didn't take the wine. So he was surprised. You're not ill. Why aren't you drinking the wine? And I got very nervous that the king would think that I'm conspiring for the Mashal of Shad. Then I got nervous because I'm going to ask a favor I haven't asked yet. I got nervous because that I do the right thing. That I felt it's not right to have wine when Jews are suffering so terribly. So I was afraid I made the wrong decision. I was afraid he would tell me what's going on over here. You're not testing the wine. Is that a good sign? So that is, he had to open up and say, this is what the Kadosh Baruch Hu orchestrated it, that he had to tell the king, and the king would be in a good frame of mind and let him go. Rav Zilberstein records this Maharsha on this Gemara. He says that this, I don't know if he said this plays itself out or could play itself into a halacha l'maaseh question. Zilberstein has told people that I've heard from that all the stories that he writes in his form on Chumash are true stories. I don't know if all of the questions that are raised in the Chashuk Echemen, Chashuk Echemen is Zilberstein's form on the Gemara, where he goes on various tangents of the Gemara and explains interesting events. So this, I don't know. It sounds too tailor-made to be true, but maybe it is true, that there was a gentleman who had a job, and his job was he was a wine taster for one of the wineries. And the deal was that he gets Shabbos off, but otherwise he has to be at work every day, certain hours. And the deal is, if he misses a day, he doesn't get paid for it. That was what it was in his contract. So there was one time when he was very upset about something. And the truth here, and he didn't he didn't think it was appropriate for him to drink tab wine that day. There was a terrorist act, and he was terribly, and appropriately, he was terribly upset by it. I can drink wine. It's my job to taste wine. At the end of the day, I'm drinking wine. At the end of the day, I taste enough wine. It's going to have an impact. So then it's not right. I just had a terrible piece of news. A Jew that is suffering, I can't drink wine. Okay. So he didn't drink. He didn't taste that day. So that day, the barrels were not tasted. So I guess at the end of the month, when all the emotions died down, people back in their stride, so the owner did not want to pay him for that the day. And he thought it wasn't right. So he didn't take off the day, but it should be more compassionate. So it's a little rushed. I said, well, let's look, according to the Marsha, look at what Nehemiah did. Nehemiah was willing to risk, right? Nehemiah had a job. He was the security team testing the wine. Now he wanted to show his camaraderie with the Jews of Yerushalayim, or he simply couldn't bring himself to drink. But he was willing to endanger himself. He wasn't able to fake it, and as a result, he could endanger. The king could be saying, "What's going on here? There's some plot against me," like the story in the Megillah. So it's hard to say that Nehemiah was halachically correct for not drinking that day, if it could have endangered him. It's hard to defend it. On the other hand, that it is that asking a person to rise above personal emotions and suffering, and every single sage, and not be willing to accept that sometimes a guy just can't have a certain job. And that sometimes he can't force himself to do the job. So Zilberstein thought that this was a riot. How could Nehemiah have taken a chance at, according to the Marsha, endangering? Because he couldn't do it. It's beyond human. He could not bring himself to drink, to have wine in people when they're suffering. So Zilberstein thought that this would be a good riot. But then he says he's not 100% sure. Why not? Because he says for Nehemiah, who was in a very high madriga, to say that he is so taken by an event that he can't bring himself to drink. Okay, that he can do. But for a guy who was a wine taster, for some winery to say, I can't do it, then maybe that's being overly dramatic and he's not really in the madriga that he is cracking himself up to be. But in any event, this Marsha is a very interesting Marsha. That was the job of Nehemiah. The Gemara has a Hatar Shasa that he was allowed to drink wine because Chazal said it's so important to have one of our own people up in the close precincts of the king. But the point the Gemara just made is that this was the secrets of events. When I was preparing the Gemara, so it struck me that he refers to Yerushalayim. How is he going to make Yerushalayim a place that Artashasta should let him go and visit? So he says it's the place where his ancestral burial site. Now that's very surprising. Who describes Yerushalayim as a place where our friends are buried? We describe Yerushalayim as a place of sanctity, Kedusha, as a place where the Malchus used to be. So apparently he thought that Artashasta is going to be more impressed with going to the burial site of his great grandparents, and this is going back to, like, I don't know. I don't know whether he's being very, very clever, because to say to go back to the ancestral capital of Jewish people is not a good thing to tell the head of an empire when you are a member of that empire by going back to headquarters. And in addition, there was a lot of nervousness about establishing the second Beis HaMikdash. And we know, and we'll refer to it in a few moments, is that the second Beis HaMikdash that, according to most sources, got off to a very rocky start. That the Nehemiah says that there was Nachash Harmoni, and there was Thunder Blood. I think there were two. One was a Jew that switched over to the other side, and they gave us a lot of aggravation when we came back to build the second Beis HaMikdash. And they reported to the king back in Shushan, the Jews are setting themselves up now for another rebellion. So it would make a lot of sense for Nehemiah to say, I'm just going back to the ancestral burial site. Right? And the emphasis is that when Jews go to Maris HaMachpelah, we don't go because that was where Avraham lived for 26 years, the Rashi says. We go that was considered to be the place, and we go there because of Maris HaMachpelah. So maybe there is some insight into this. Good, Michael?
That
will be buried based upon the promise that was successful. Right. Right. Could be. Okay. Could be. So that's what he argues. And they let him go. And the top Rashi gives us some context that Vayomachanani Yerushalayim, the top Rashi, Shvashikar Olu B'nei Agola Miyamos Koresh. Because the Jews of Babel that were going back to Yerushalayim had gone already. And that was under the rule of Koresh. Vayusham Miyamov Ubiyameya Hashveirosh. Ve'artachshasta zeu dor yovesh she'achar achashveirosh she'nivne abayis v'shnashtayim lidar yovesh. This is where the numbers get very hard to pull together. We know that dar yovesh is that one of the dar yovishes. There are several dar yovesh, but you know there's one dar yovesh which was the child of Esther and Achashveirosh. And we know that sometime around the end of Achashverosh's reign, Koresh led us back to build the second Beis HaMikdash. So Rashi is putting it together that Nehemiah was in the time of Koresh. V'hoyu shom b'yamov u'bimei Achashverosh. And Achashverosh and Koresh seem to be either a butt or run over each other in terms of the empire. V'artashasta zehu dar yovesh. The yovesh is the child of Esther. Shenivna bayis b'shnas shtayim dar yovesh. And we know that Beis HaMikdash was built the second year of dar yovesh. And at that time, there were many Jews left in Babel. So there were many Jews left in Eretz Yisrael. This is already the first, the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. The second Beis HaMikdash was already up and running. The walls were in terrible shape. And the bulk of the Jews were living in Babel. So Gemara says, towards the two thirds of the way down. So it sent me to the city of my ancestral burial site, Ir Kivrei Savoisai, Vo'ibonena. And I built it up. How long will you have to go? When he coming back? And the king found this a good idea, and he sent me. I gave him a certain time when I think I'll be back. So that's how we know that the event of the first parak took place before the event of the second parak, because Nehemiah is telling the king in the second parak what he learned from Chandani of the first parak. Okay? And since they're both in the 20th year, so therefore they had the beginning of the year of the of the non-Jewish kings has to go back to Tishrei camping Nisa. Moshe Rav Yosef, B'yoyim Esr, now we're going, we're switching gears from the Nevuah, from the story of Nehemiah, to a parallel Navi Haggai, who was around the same time. So Haggai, it's recorded, to the Nevuah of Haggai is recorded, the Gemara says, Moshe Rav Yosef, Arba B'yoyim Esr, So on the 20th day, on the 24th day, the second year of the Yavish's king. So what could Bashishi be? We have the date of the month, but it doesn't say which month. So probably the sixth month. Uksiv ubashvi, in the seventh month, presumably. Ve'esvi echol lachoydesh. Vim isa v'shvi v'shna sholosh v'boyele. And once again, if Nisan was the Rosh Chodesh, then these would not be in the same year. Omer Babo. So the Gemara says, Koresh Melech Kosher Hoya, Lefichach Monulei Kemalche Yisrael. Gemara says that Koresh was a kosher king. Since he was a kosher king, we counted him like the kings of Israel. And Koresh gave us a second base of Mikdash. And Koresh was a checkered personality. The Gemara is going to say the very last line that he had a period of his life where he was very, very good. And a period of life where he wasn't so good to us. He was the one who allowed us to rebuild the second base of Mikdash. Because Baruch Hu sent him as the Shliach to give us the second base of Mikdash. The Gemara says when it came to Koresh, we gave him the covenant of counting him like we count a Jewish king. Right? That was how we gave him a covenant. We sent him that we're. He shouldn't. The reason that in our documents, so the Koresh count is different. They say because, in other words, there are different ways of giving Shalom Malchus. So one of the giving Shalom Malchus is saying we're going to use your count. We're not going to use our count. Right. So this is already another Madriga. We're going to use your. We're using your monarchy as the determining factor what the date is. But we're going to go one step further. We're going to give you the covenant of being counted like a Jewish king. So we're going to use you and not use your own king. Okay, we're not rebelling. We're here. We are your subjects. But we'll be machnif you. We'll flatter you. And we'll treat you as if you're a kosher king. He gave us the second Mesa Mikdash, right? Probably the Hezra Domer is that Chazal view Koresh as an emissary for the Rabbonu Shlom. And we all know that Yemos HaMashiach, so the Chazal tell us, Mashiach can come in different ways. Mashiach can come, Eliyahu Novi swoops down, and he comes with in a very spiritual and almost in a positively traumatic way, or we can come riding in on a horse and say, it's time to go back, right? So it depends on how we're the mizocha. Mizocha to get a miraculous event, the Kriyas Yamsuf, because Baruch Hu shows himself, or we're going to have a step by step, going to have four or five elections per year. Step by step, till we get everything to the place, the different ways in which Mashiach can come. So Chazal understood that Koresh was an emissary from the Ribbono Shel Olam to give us a second base of Mikdash. Kadosh Baruch Hu could have given us a we would have deserved, he could have given us the base on Mikdash. We didn't deserve that. We deserved our squeaker redemption. We deserve not a Jewish king, but a non-Jewish king. And he allows a group to go down, and a certain group goes down. And then we get to start building second base of Mikdash, and then the Jews, some non-Jews complain with the Tzar. So we get a Geula. But it's not a, it's a, you know, tier two, tier three. So, but we do recognize that Kerbet is a Geula. Right? My wife once gave a drush over here. Darshan the Medrash that says, and Medrash HaZinu, that we are a people who have trouble saying, hey, we always want things to be done the best possible way. So we have trouble. We're getting a redemption, but it's not a coffee table book redemption. So Chazal said, Kairish gave us second base on Mikdash. We go back to Eretz Yisrael. We could bring Karbonis again. Get a Kohen Gadol again. So we have to recognize that he was an emissary from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So that's why I think that's the pshat. Chazal said, we're going to count from Kairish. Because we're still in Golas. But you have to realize what kind of Golas we're in. So therefore, we're going to count Koresh as if he was a Jewish king from Nisan. In other words, his major tachlis was to build the second base of Mikdash. He wasn't king for so long, I think for 3 or 4 years. So his tachlis was defined by Nisan. So Mishum Shalom Malchus means Koresh. But internally, we say this is a different kind of a king. So we have to recognize that. So part of a recognition is he gets counted from Nisan, like it began with the Marashah. He gets counted because his Iker Tachlis, the way that from Jews look in the United Nations. Tachlis was to give us Eretz Yisrael. But that's what I think we were saying, that Kermesh was a Melech Kosher. So that's the next Gemara. That's what I'll discuss, how kosher he was before he wasn't kosher, and why he wasn't kosher. But the Gemara points out that he was called Koresh, the name that we gave him. It's kosher with the names, with the letters mixed up. Okay, sorry we said the right thing. Then I forgot to bring the, thank you very much for bringing the computer. And I thought I could manage the phone, but I couldn't find the link on the phone. Good night. Thank you very much.